yay, oh yay, oh yay. The Honorable the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable the Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. May God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has one clause on its oral submission docket. That is the Honorable Rex Davis, Republican nominee for Chief Justice of the Court of Appeals for the 10th Appellate Judicial District versus M.A. Taylor, Chair, 10th Appellate Judicial District Republican Executive Committee, and Antonio O. Garza, Jr., Secretary of State. This is an original mandamus proceeding, and the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The relator may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by so advising the marshal at the court. These arguments are being recorded for the court, and if you wish to purchase a tape of the argument, you may make application at our clerk. We are ready to hear argument from the relator.
Mr. Barrett, present argument for the relator. Relator has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Please, the court. My name is Roy Barrett, and I represent Rex Davis, who is seated back here, who, as the court has said, is the Republican nominee for Chief Justice of the 10th Court of Appeals. Other counsel representing the relator, Mr. Andy McSwain, Mr. John Clark, who are both at the counsel table, and Ken Anderson of Dallas, who's back in the audience. We're here today because a candidate for judicial office who did all that he was required to do under the statute to be a proper nominee of the party has been told that he won't be on the ballot because another person, the chair of the nominating committee, failed to do his legal duty to certify the candidate to the Secretary of State. And the Secretary of State has taken the position that since the filing was late, the Secretary of State is not permitted and not obligated to accept and file the certification and to certify the candidate's name to the 16 county election officials for inclusion on the ballot. If this result is allowed to stand, it'll be the first case that I can find where an innocent candidate who came to court in a timely fashion to seek relief before it was too late to create chaos.
Don't most of those other cases, though, deal with a situation where the candidate was responsible himself or herself for getting on the ballot, such as filing for a primary, whereas none of the cases that you decided deal with a situation where it is up to the county chair to make the decision to put him on the ballot?
Well, I think two of the cases that we have cited deal with situations where it was somebody else's responsibility. In the LaRouche case, LaRouche did all he was supposed to do. He was a proper nominee. He filed, he paid his filing fee. The chairman of the party made a mistake of law, thought he couldn't be on the ballot.
I understand that, but LaRouche had his own opportunity, his own control, whether or not he was going to file to get on the ballot.
Right.
Here, Davis had no opportunity to file to get on the ballot. It wasn't his option. The only option was whether or not he was the selectee of the county chair.
Right.
So isn't this case really a situation where it's the county chair who has the decision-making process and the option, and Davis is just, in a way, a pawn in this whole game?
Well, the 16 county chairs of the 16 counties making up this district have the right to nominate. They met. There was a quorum present. They nominated. That substance of the business was done.
There's nothing in the record indicating that they have any, and there's nothing in the law indicating any filing procedure or method of making an application to this group of 16, is there?
Not that I'm aware of.
They could have chose anybody they wanted to.
They could.
Met the constitutional requirements.
Yes. But they chose Davis in a duly called meeting with a quorum present and
That's
nominated him. Ma'am?
That's undisputed, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. That's undisputed. In the brief filed yesterday on behalf of Mr. White, there was some conjecture raised about whether or not our affidavits from the county chair, from the chair of the committee, and from Mr. Davis, who were both present, that there was a quorum present, really were a conclusion. So we filed this morning affidavits from three of the chairs, the county chairs that were there, that say there were 14 members of the 16-member committee there, and the vote was unanimous for Davis. So that's undisputed. There was some issue raised about maybe they didn't come to Austin to nominate him, but that's what the notice of the meeting says they came to Austin to do, and the affidavits we have before the court clearly show that they had a vote and they nominated him.
he accepted the nomination at the governor's office, and when he walked out of the office, he'd already filed the documents to run, and he was the nominee of the party.
Mr. Barrett, could Mr. Davis have compelled the county chairs to meet and to vote his nomination? Could he have compelled them to do so?
I don't believe so.
Could he have compelled Mr. Taylor to have certify him to the Secretary of State if the county chairs had voted to not nominate him?
No.
At what point would his ability to compel the party to nominate him vest in this process?
I think once he becomes the nominee. I think once the committee has met, they've had a vote, and by majority vote, they selected him as the nominee. He is as much at that point the nominee as a candidate who files for the primary, wins, gets into a runoff, and then wins the runoff. He has applied, he has been voted.
Could the chairs on June the 4th decided that they had made a mistake in their vote and voted to nominate somebody else?
I don't know. I don't
know. Is there anything in the statute that up until the date the last date to certify the nominee, is there any provision that would prevent the 16 county chairs from changing their minds?
Not that I'm aware of.
Could Mr. Davis have compelled the party at any time before the final date for certification party, compelled the party in any way to have certified him?
I don't think he can compel the party to do it. I think the only person he could compel to do it, the only person that had a legal duty to do it, is the chair of the nominating committee. The person selected as the chair of the 16-person nominating committee had the duty under the statute to certify them. Now, I don't think he can compel that person to comply with their legal duty until they have failed to perform their legal duty. There's some argument made by the Secretary of State that, well, it became moot after he failed to comply, and now it's too late to ask for mandamus. But if we had come and asked for mandamus before Mr. Taylor failed to do his legal duty, when he still had a week or a day or a month left to certify him, the court would have said he hadn't failed to comply with his duty. There's no duty to certify him early. There's just a duty to certify him by the deadline, on or before the 60th day. And so get out of here because you're asking us to compel him to do something he's still got time to do. We can't compel him to do it until the time has passed and he hadn't done it. But Davis is the nominee of the party. He has the right as the nominee to go forward. The 16 people on that committee want him to go, or 14 of them want him to go forward. We have one person who made an error and didn't know he was supposed to certify and didn't do it. And that shouldn't thwart the will of the 14 chairs who nominated him. Just like if the chair of the party fails to certify a candidate that is nominated in a primary, that should not thwart the right of that candidate to be on the ballot. And the candidate, once he is the victor in the primary, ought to have a right to come in and say, when the party chair has failed or refused to comply, court, please make him comply. What if M.A. Taylor, this isn't the facts, but what if M.A. Taylor was the only person on that committee who didn't favor Davis, and the vote had been 13-1? And M.A. Taylor, who is the only one who can certify him, just goes off and says, I'll fix him, I won't certify him. He calls me and I say, I'm going to certify him. Oh, I'll certify you, but I've got until that day. And he never does. And 5 o'clock passes. The Secretary of State's argument would be, you're out. Because the duty to certify you couldn't enforce before the deadline, and now after the deadline it's too late.
Ordinarily in mandamus proceedings, we require, before we'll consider granting relief, a failure to perform a ministerial act or in some circumstances, a clear abuse of discretion. This isn't either one of those circumstances,
no,
is it?
No, sir. I think
and so. Really, is there any respondent who's failed to perform their legal duty other than Mr. Taylor?
Yes. 273 of the election code says, I think you have mandamus jurisdiction to compel a party official or an election official to perform their legal duty. Mr. Taylor is a party official. He failed to perform his legal duty. He failed to file the certification timely. You've got authority under 273, I believe, to compel him to do so. The Secretary of State...
Well, it would never still not be timely if he did it today, I guess, would it?
Would not be timely, but this
except
court...
Except in some legal fiction, I guess.
No, there, well, it's a legal fiction, it's a legal remedy. He can't file it now. He missed the deadline.
Right.
When he tried to file it after the deadline, the Secretary of State wrote him a letter and said, I won't accept it. Now, he didn't do it right, he just wrote a letter. But, and it wasn't sworn to. Secretary of State said, well, you didn't do it right, but I can't accept it anyway because it's after the deadline.
And isn't that a distinction from the cases you cite supporting your position? In those cases, all of the candidates at least attempted to file before the deadline expired. In this situation, we didn't even have an attempt to file until after the deadline had expired.
Well, in the LaRouche case, the candidate filed before the deadline, but then the party official failed to comply. He failed to certify the candidate within the deadline because he made a mistake of what the law was. And then after the deadline, this court said, you got to file, and said to the Secretary of State, we assume you'll take it.
I realize that, but will you at least concede that all the cases that you cite in support of your position have a fact situation where the candidate attempted to file before the expiration of the deadline?
Yes.
Mr. Barrett, on your example, where the person who was charged, in this case Mr. Taylor, went against the wishes of the other county chairman who are voting on the nomination, should this court get involved in an inter-party fight over who that party is going to nominate to a position on the ballot? Should we try and... We don't have a certification by the date. There's no certification that has to be made by the party at all. But if it's going to make one, it's got to be by this date. When one doesn't happen, and one who, and the individual who expects to have been nominated comes to this court, would it be your view that this court should look behind that failure of the party to certify a nominee for the ballot under these circumstances to find out why party didn't, and then to decide whether or not the reasons they give or no reasons at all or whatever should excuse the party from having failed to make its deadline?
Yes, sir, I think you should, and I think you have before. In the Raines case, the State Democratic Executive Committee versus Raines, there you looked behind the process and you determined that the process had not correctly been done because that process had been a telephone meeting, which isn't allowed by statute. That candidate had been certified by the Secretary of State, and you ordered the Secretary of State to take the person's name off the ballot because the meeting hadn't been held properly and the person wasn't the proper nominee of the party. Now, here we don't really have a fact question about whether Davis is the proper nominee. The Secretary of State, in their brief, concedes that Davis was appropriately nominated. This is not an inter-party fight. There is no dispute among the 14. There is no evidence, there is no affidavit, there is no indication that they disagree. This is a failure of a party chairman because he did not know the law to perform a ministerial and clerical act to file notice of the nomination with the Secretary of State. The nomination is solid. It is good. There is no, you are not even getting involved in a party dispute. You did, in effect, get involved in a party dispute in the Raines case because you had to, because they didn't do it right. And you held the candidate wasn't appropriately nominated or the Secretary of State taken off the ballot.
The certification here was required on September 11th.
It was required on the 6th, I believe, sir.
And Judge Davis says he found out about it on, that it had not been made on the 12th.
Yes, sir.
And did not file in this court until the 18th.
Yes, sir.
What is the significance of that delay?
I don't think there's any, and I think the bright line test is either one of two things about when you can get involved by mandamus to avoid an unjust result and still not create chaos. This court has said...
6 days is a long time to wait.
Yes, sir. It is a long time to wait, but there's an intervening weekend, and we had to prepare the pleadings. He found out about it on Friday late, and we filed, I believe, on Tuesday or Wednesday.
On Wednesday?
Yes, sir.
And we gave the respondents 24 hours to respond.
Yes, sir.
Pretty short fuse.
It was.
Latches is an element of mandamus relief. If you wait too long, the court just won't interrupt things.
Right.
Why isn't latches involved here on the latest part?
The court has held previously that as long as early voting has not yet begun, then the court still has the ability to come in, enforce constitutional provisions, enforce statutory provisions, enforce open elections, avoid unjust results. We filed on the 18th. Early voting could not have begun. Ballots could not even be mailed until September 21. This court enjoined the doing of that act on September 20. There is no question in this case about whether early voting has already begun or whether the process would be interrupted. Now, in the Escobar case cited by the court of, by the Secretary of State, there is even some indication that the bright line deadline would be when early voting in person begins, which for this election is October 16. I wish we could have filed sooner, but we filed before early voting began, and this court acted before early voting began, and you don't hear one statement from the Secretary of State's office, even though they oppose our position, that this cannot be done, that it will interfere with the process. They just say, our rules are our rules, and we don't want it to be done.
Let's assume that we rule in your favor. What will be the bright line test for determining when the filing deadline is in the future, whenever the filing has to be made by a county chair? What will the time deadline be? Will it be 55 days before? Will it be 60 days before? Will it be before the ballots are printed? When will county chairs feel comfortable that they actually have to get this thing filed?
Well, the deadline will still be the deadline under the code. It will still be 60 days.
But we'll have a case out there that says, well, even though the deadline says 60 days, look, if you're maybe 6 days late, that's okay, because we got a case out there that says that's okay.
You already got a case out there, Hanna versus Slagle. In that case, the court permitted the late certification under this very statute.
But that was a situation where the candidate attempted to file timely.
Well, no, the candidate couldn't file. I believe that was a certification case. I may be mistaken about that, but I think it was, because there, Mr. Aiken withdrew from the Board of Education race and wanted to run for the Senate, and then both parties tried to put nominees on the ballot under this procedure, but they were late because of all the interruption, and the Secretary of State refused to take them both. So both state chairs came and said, we ought to be able to do this late, and the court said, that's all right.
In these circumstances, is it your position that the Secretary of State should have accepted the filing and should have in the Aiken case, Hanna versus Slagle, or should all of these cases come to the courts to order somebody to do it?
I think the Secretary of State misapplies and relies upon 161.008, and I'll talk about that in rebuttal. I don't think that applies here, and I don't think that is a reason not to take this certification for a number of reasons. One is that statute does not apply to this nomination. And number two, it's a time-related statute anyway, and it's not mandatory, but it's directed. But I don't know, Your Honor. It may be that these cases need to come to the court in the rare events where they occur, so the court can look as a court of equity at all the circumstances and determine whether or not the circumstances justify the late filing and the order that it be done.
If there are equitable principles in our determination, isn't your client hurt by the fact that he made no attempts between June the 3rd and September the 6th to ascertain what the law was and whether it had been complied with?
This is an...
If this was a case where he was asking the responsible county chair to make a certification and the county chair declined, wouldn't that be a stronger case for our exercising mandamus?
Perhaps it would be, but I think that would be a misapplication of equity in this case. This candidate had no ability to do this act. The Secretary of State's office confirmed to him that you have done all you can do, and you couldn't have filed the certification if you wanted to. So when the candidate is not able to perform the act that is required, then I don't think the candidate, and when it's not the candidate's legal duty to perform that act, are we going to say that a candidate is out, a candidate has lost, because a candidate did not look to see that someone else performed their legal duty? I submit to you that candidates running for public office today have enough deadlines, enough filing requirements, enough reporting requirements of their own to keep up with, that the court should not deny them relief because they allegedly failed to keep up with somebody else's requirements and encourage and try to cajole someone else to do their legal duty. That ought not to be the candidate's responsibility. The candidate doesn't stand for everybody. He should stand or she should stand for themselves.
You sort of learned in this case that the candidate ought to check and make sure all that's been done.
It would be a good idea, and I wish my client had done so, but he should not be denied an equitable result, and the people should not be denied the right to determine this election because someone else, other than this candidate, failed to do something. All the cases that the Secretary of State saw.
I think you're beyond answering the question in any
oratory. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Ms. Tina Parker and Mr. Blake Roderson present an argument for the respondents. Ms. Parker, both of you.
May it please the court, I represent the respondent, M.A. Taylor, and I'm here today just to state that M.A. Taylor agrees with the relief sought by the petitioner Rex Davis, and he agrees with the candidate's position that Mr. Davis should be placed on the ballot because of no fault of his own. Mr. Taylor failed to certify his nomination. Additionally, Mr. Taylor represents to the court today that he stands ready and willing and able to execute the certification of Mr. Davis, the certification of the district's nominating committee's nomination of Rex Davis for the office of Chief Justice, and that he's ready and willing and able to deliver and serve the same on the Secretary of the State if this court so orders, and would do so immediately upon notice of this court to do so.
With that being the case, how can we mandamus Taylor?
Mr. Taylor, the respondent in this case, was advised in writing and orally that the Secretary of State's office would not accept the certification. Also, the time period for filing the certification had passed. It's the respondent's position that any attempt on his part to attempt certification would be futile, and that is tantamount to basically a refusal to act on the part of Mr. Taylor. In effect, he could not file because the Secretary of State told him in writing and orally that they would not accept the certification.
So your position is that we should not mandamus Taylor, but mandamus the Secretary of State?
My position is that Mr. Taylor agrees with the relief sought by petitioner in this case, and that he stands ready to do as the court orders.
Who does Mr. Taylor want us to mandate?
Mr. Taylor is requesting that he be mandamus, and in the alternative, that the Secretary of State's office, or additionally, the Secretary of State's office be mandamus to accept the certification and to order Rex Davis's name to be placed on the ballots in the various counties.
But I'm still confused. How can we order him to do that which he is already willing and able to do?
Because the time period for the filing of the certification had passed, and because the Secretary of State's office has said, regardless of what you do, Mr. Taylor, we will not accept your certification, he has, in effect, taken no further action because any action by Mr. Taylor would, in effect, be a futile attempt on his part to attempt certification. He has no authority to act without this court ordering him to act and ordering the Secretary of State's office to accept the certification.
Thank you, counsel. Would you start the 20-minute clock?
May it please the court, I'm Blake Roderson. I represent the Secretary of State, Antonio Garza, in this matter. In this case, one thing is absolutely clear. The Secretary of State has not violated any duty imposed by law in refusing to certify Justice Davis for the ballot.
On what basis did the Secretary of State deny the certification of the late filing?
There were actually two separate bases for denying the certification. The first is that it was not timely.
I understand. What statute are you lying on?
161.008.
That's the East Party elections and convention. This is neither. What is your next argument?
The other argument is that the certification did not meet the form requirements of 145.037. Namely, the certification did not include the residence of Justice Davis, thus there was no way to verify that he was a resident of one of the 16 counties in the district. Second, it did not include the reason for the vacancy. And third and finally, it did not include an acknowledgement from Taylor. Mandamus is an extraordinary remedy. It should issue only in very specific circumstances, again, to correct a violation of a duty imposed by law when there is no other adequate remedy by law.
Did the Secretary of State's office advise Mr. Taylor of the formal deficiencies in the filing?
As far as the September 12th letter, Your Honor?
Should be on this form and should be sworn to, and you need to do this and this and this.
As to whether they informed him it should be on a specific form, I'm not certain, but I do know that in their letter responding back to Mr. Taylor, that they indicated what specifically was wrong with the certification, both on the basis that it was untimely and that it did not have all the information required, specifically that it was not acknowledged under 145.037.
If there was a form that the Secretary of State would like to see used, it certainly ought to call that somebody's attention, shouldn't it, or not?
It would have been a prudent action, Your Honor. But as a county chairman, Mr. Taylor would have already been in possession of that form, which is indicated in the affidavit of Ann McGee and attached to my briefing. County chairmen are sent a packet of forms and instructions for basically all election procedures at the beginning of the election cycle.
That's just for those that are on the ballot in his county. But my understanding, was chosen by the nominating committee and acted as chairman of a multi-county nominating.
That's correct, Your Honor. His duty to certify Justice Davis to the ballot was in his capacity as the chairman of this executive committee.
Not as county.
And not as county chairman. However, he still was county chairman, and he had possession of the information sent out from the Secretary of State's office. There was no reason that he shouldn't have known of the duty to certify.
Did I see somewhere in the record that in his county, Mr. Davis was on the sample ballot?
I believe that that was in Mr. Taylor's affidavit that was attached to the related brief.
Ferguson, is it your position on behalf of the Secretary of State that once the deadline passes that no court has the power to remedy situation regardless of the circumstances?
I would say that the court, of course, has the power to remedy the circumstances as it sees fit. In this particular circumstance, however, I don't believe that the equities would require this court to issue mandamus, and I don't think that the requisites for a mandamus are present in this case. Namely, the Secretary of State has not violated any duty imposed by law.
If well, Mr. That's, Taylor had intentionally,
go ahead.
If Mr. Taylor had intentionally failed to perform his duty, would we be in a different posture in your mind?
I think that that would certainly balance the equities more in favor of Justice Davis in this case, yes.
What duty would the Secretary have violated in that case?
That, again, is another problem. There's no violation of the duty by the Secretary of State. I believe that that the relator has somewhat misapprehended my statement in the brief that this may have been moot upon the passing of the deadline. In his reply brief, the relator seems to be saying that as soon as the deadline for Mr. Taylor to certify for the ballot had passed, that this case became moot. That is not my argument at all. My argument as to mootness would be that once the September 11th deadline passed, any duty that would have been owed by the Secretary of State to certify him would have passed, and it puts us in the situation of there having been no violation of law.
Mr. Broderson, let me see if I understand your argument. You just stated that this court has the power to balance the equities if it sees fit. And if Mr. Taylor had intentionally not done what the law says he ought to do, we could act. But if he screws up, inadvertent, mistake, lack of knowledge, you're saying we're powerless to correct it. Is that your argument?
I'm not saying that you're powerless to correct it in that situation, Your Honor.
What is the remedy?
The remedy, I guess, in that instance would be mandamus if this court is willing to issue mandamus without a finding of a violation of law.
But not against the Secretary of State. Are you saying it would be appropriately issued against the Secretary of State under those circumstances?
Without a violation of law on the Secretary of State's part, I'm just not aware of how the court can get beyond that hurdle as far as issuing a mandamus against the
Secretary
of State.
And again, to be clear, what law are you talking about? You conceded that 146 does not apply, 161 does not apply because it's not a convention or a party election.
I think that 161.008 may apply in this case.
How can it apply? Help me understand it. If it's neither of the provisions that it specifically states, party elections or conventions.
Okay. In this case, it
How do we make this into one of those, fit into one of those categories?
There's no other statutory provision for the certification of, I'll refer to Justice Davis as a replacement candidate. There are provisions in the election code.
Who's he replacing? I know he's replacing.
Well, and that's why it's not actually an accurate term, but that's what I've been thinking of it in my head. The election code states that the Secretary of State must certify to the county election officials by the 55th day before the general election for minor party candidates and major party candidates. That's 161.008. And for independent candidates, which is 142.010. But there's no provision for when the Secretary of State's office must certify as to a replacement candidate or a candidate that's filling a vacancy. However, with regard to vacancies of offices, Chapter 202, which is the portion of the election code which governs how vacancies for state office will be filled, states that Chapter 145 sets forth the method by which a candidate will be selected. Chapter 145, of course, is the provision for certification of a candidate to the ballot. And it also sets forth how candidate vacancies, as opposed to office vacancies, will be filled. The use of the provisions in Chapter 145 for selecting a candidate for a vacant office may explain why the legislature did not specify a date for the certification of a candidate for a vacant office. Such a candidate steps into the shoes of a candidate that was selected by primary election or convention, and therefore 161.008, by default and by admittedly somewhat convoluted statutory construction, would apply to this instance.
Mr. Broderson, do I understand you're saying that the Secretary of State can't be mandamus because he's not violated any duty? Do you agree, as argued by the relator, that Mr. Taylor failed to discharge a ministerial duty by filing timely, so that there is a mandamusable situation as far as his failure to act is concerned?
As far as Mr. Taylor's situation, I can see where a violation of a duty imposed by law has occurred, and therefore, yes, Mr. Taylor would be subject to.
Then hasn't our court answered your second part of the argument in LaRouche, where it held that Slagle was required to certify LaRouche, and then it said even though Hanna has not violated any non-discretionary duty, we expect, of course, that Hanna will fulfill his statutory duties once LaRouche is certified. And doesn't that apply to the facts in this case, which are undisputed?
I'm not certain that LaRouche applies directly to the facts of this case, because in that particular case, the only duty that the Secretary of State may have had, and I believe this court left the question open, would have been to accept the certification of LaRouche to the ballot by the party chairman.
Well, what statutory duty was the court talking about? You argue just to accept it and
yes.
go no further?
That's exactly correct, Your Honor, because in that case, the Secretary of State had no duty to certify LaRouche to the ballot in primary elections. That duty falls upon the state county chairman.
Well, so, but in this case, under these circumstances, the Secretary of State's duty, if there's been a timely certification, would be to put that person's name on the ballot.
That's exactly
correct. So certify that to the 16 counties, correct?
That's exactly correct, Your Honor.
You argue that because time has expired, quote, entry of mandamus against Respondent Taylor would not translate to a duty to Respondent Garza to certify the relator for the general election ballot. In other words, if the court decided that Mr. Taylor still had a duty now to certify to the Secretary of State, the Secretary of State is not going to certify him for the ballot without mandamus.
If the court decided to mandamus Taylor, that's a concern of mine, and I would request guidance from this court, because statutorily speaking, any duty to certify Davis to the ballot may have expired upon...
Just to be very clear, though, your position in the brief seems to be that the Secretary of State is not going to do anything unless he mandates. Is that true?
I'm not comfortable making that representation, Your Honor.
What else does this statement mean? That since the deadline has passed, this would not translate into a duty, and therefore he's not going to act. In other words, we can't do what we did in LaRouche and say we conditionally mandamus the chair to certify, and we assume that the secretary will act as he's supposed to.
The Secretary of State would prefer that, in that instance, the Secretary of State's duty be a little more clearly defined because of the question
of... It's very simple. Put them on the ballot. The two decisions. Put them on the ballot or leave them off the ballot. What is it? What ambiguity is there? He either does one or the other.
Mr. Brosnan, let me ask you. You mentioned in LaRouche that, unlike this circumstance, Secretary of State has no authority to refuse to certify someone to the ballot. In other words, if it's a primary and the candidate complies with the statutes regarding getting on the party ballot for the primary, the Secretary of State has no, what were you saying, there's no obligation of the Secretary of State to certify them to the ballot after they win the election, or what is this that happens?
Oh, my statement with that regard went to the Secretary of State's duty or lack of a duty to certify candidates to the primary election ballot.
Okay.
For the primary election ballot, that's a party function.
And LaRouche was a question of putting the candidate on the Democratic primary ballot.
That's correct.
And what would the Secretary of State's authority have to do with the getting LaRouche's name on the Democratic primary ballot?
It wouldn't have had anything to do, and I think that's the reason that this court said the Secretary of State has violated no duty and did not issue mandamus against the Secretary of State.
If the Secretary of State had a statute that required certification by a party to be by a certain date and that did not occur, would the Secretary of State have any authority, absent an order from this court, to certify a candidate to the ballot for the general election?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
So your dilemma is this, that unlike LaRouche, where the Secretary of State had no duty with respect to the primary ballot at issue, you're concerned about this court mandamusing Taylor to certify the Secretary of State and the Secretary of State not having the authority under law to certify to the general election ballot without some order from this court. Is that your dilemma?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
What is, how does it, the procedure, the Secretary of State notifies the counties of the state candidates? Or how does it work? Once the primary is ended, those names go to the Secretary of State?
My understanding of it, Your Honor, is that once primaries have ended, then the county or the state chairman certifies the winners of the primaries to the Secretary of State's office. And the Secretary of State's office, and that must be done by the 60th day before the general election, and then by the 55th day before the general election.
Is that just state candidates, or is that all the candidates who are elected?
I believe that is statewide and district candidates.
Multi-district?
Yes. And then at that point, the Secretary of State, under 161.008, certifies to the county election officials, the official responsible for preparing the ballot, certifies to them the names of the candidates for the ballot.
And there is the candidates themselves are not required to file with the Secretary of State the way you would file for a primary.
With regard to major party candidates, and I believe also minor party candidates, that is correct, Your Honor. Independent candidates would be required to file directly with the Secretary of State.
Is it the Secretary of State's position that if mandamus were to issue at this point, it would impair the election process?
At this point, due to the emergency order issued by this court on last Friday, and assuming a quick opinion, no. It would not impair the election process any more than it's already been impaired, with all due respect. But and I say that simply because there's a 45-day time period, which is in the statute for mailing early ballots out, and that is partly to allow us to mail ballots to our military personnel overseas.
Any other questions? Your brief states, Garza would assert that a grant of mandamus in this instance would work a grave injustice to all candidates that managed to comply with the mandates of the Texas Election Code to appear on the ballot, and to all the voters of Texas who rely upon Garza to enforce the election code so as to ensure fair and equitable elections. That's the Secretary of State's position, not just the Attorney General's.
That's correct, Your Honor.
If Mr. Davis had come to us on September the 4th, 2 days before Mr. Taylor's deadline, was about to expire, would he have been in a position to obtain mandamus at that time, do you think, to require Mr. Taylor to certify?
I think in that case that this court probably would have said this isn't ripe yet because Mr. Taylor has not violated a duty imposed by law.
So it only becomes ripe after the time deadline is passed.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel. Is Mr. Simmons present? Court is ready to hear argument on rebuttal from the elector.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Secretary of State takes the position that he has a legal duty to comply with 161.008, and that statute doesn't apply. It doesn't apply for a number of reasons. But he takes the position that he is the one who certifies the candidates for inclusion on the general election ballot, and that has generally been what has been done. And this court, on two prior occasions, has acknowledged the duty of the Secretary of State to make that certification. In one case, Raines, he made it wrong because the Secretary of State did not realize that the committee meeting had been by telephone, and he accepted that and certified the candidate. And then this court said you had a duty to do it, and you had a duty to do it right and take him off the ballot. On the other occasion, involving the Aiken case, the Slagle versus Hanna case, where
the folks for the State Board of Education got nominated late. The Secretary of State said, too late. I'm not going to take it for either party. This court said, in those unusual circumstances, this kind of a replacement election, you take it. You have a duty to take it, and you certify the candidates. Unless the Secretary of State certifies the candidates, this candidate, he can't get on the 16 ballots. He got on the McLennan County ballot. M.A. Taylor saw him on the ballot because he put him on the ballot as the local candidate. He didn't get on the ballot in the other 15 counties because the Secretary of State had blackballed him, had kept him off the ballot. He says, I can mess it up, I can blackball him, I can keep him off the ballot, I have done that here, but now you can't mandamus me to fix it. This court is a court of equity sitting in mandamus and can do so. He has the legal duty to do what's right and to be the chief election officer.
Mr. Barrett,
run the election.
Don't you think that if the Secretary of State had done what you wanted him to do without a lawsuit, he would have been a party to the lawsuit? The lawsuit was going to be filed either way.
Yes, sir.
So he chose other parties to be up front rather than the Secretary of State directly in the lawsuit.
Yes, sir. And I do not think that was an incorrect decision. I think when he was presented with the filing by Mr. Taylor after the deadline, this matter had to come to court.
Do you think it's incorrect, his position in this court, that it would be a grave injustice to grant relief in this case?
Be a grave injustice not to grant relief. This is an innocent candidate who could not do what has not been done. The people deserve the right to decide this election. The code ought to be interpreted not in favor of strict construction, maybe in favor of strict compliance when a candidate must do something and fails to do it. And this court has done that. And the three cases he cites are strict compliance cases where the candidate himself or herself failed to comply and had no real equity on their side. And the court said, I'm going to enforce strict compliance. Don't pay the filing fee.
Why doesn't the right belong to the party?
Sir?
Why doesn't the right Chief Justice State that's on the ballot belong either to the party of the 10th District or the State Republican Executive Committee as a whole? Why is it Mr. Davis's personal life?
He is the nominee, duly selected, duly nominated. Once he becomes the nominee, it is his right, just like he had ran a primary.
Can any candidate ever lose his or her personal rights because the party they choose to be affiliated messes up? If the Republican Party doesn't have a convention like they're required to, fails to hold a primary, can you lose their rights, or is it always the candidate's rights?
Well, I hope that once the party has selected someone by the members of the party voting in a primary or the delegates voting in a convention, that all of those delegates and all of those hundreds of thousands of voters can't lose the right for the candidate of their choice from their party to be on the ballot because the chairman of the state party or the chairman of the district nominating committee fails to perform his or her legal duty and perform a ministerial act.
Could Judge Pirtle have mandamus at least one more member of the Amarillo Court's executive committee to come to that live meeting that nominated him to run in the 7th judicial district?
I don't believe so. I don't believe...
What's the difference between somebody not showing up at a meeting? As I recall, they had 19 out of 39 at the meeting, so they dialed somebody else up by phone. And somebody who went to the meeting not turning in a paper they're supposed to.
I don't think you could... I don't think a candidate or a prospective candidate could mandamus, obviously, people to vote for him in the primary.
Not
or people
to
vote for him at a convention.
To do their duty. They had a duty to meet...
Well, they should. I submit, Your Honor, they had a right. They were county chairs. They were duly constituted members, but they didn't have to go. People don't have to go to a convention once they're elected as delegates.
Once they go to a convention, then they have a duty to report what they've done.
I think once a person has been properly nominated, either at a primary or a convention or by a district nominating committee, and he or she is the valid nominee of the party, the public has an interest in that person being on the ballot, the candidate has an interest in that person being on the ballot, and a ministerial failure to act should not thwart that public purpose and deny the people the right to vote. And that's what the Secretary of State argues for, because he wants his rules to be enforced, so his rules will be there for the safe and convenient operation of his office.
Thank you, counsel. I have one question directed, I think, to everybody in the room. This first mandamus I've been a part of in 8.5 years where the real party in interest did not present an oral argument. Was the real party given that opportunity, or did the real party request that opportunity? Mr. Adams? All right. Any other questions or comments?
Sir,
back, yes.
I'm Joe Cannon, real party in interest, and I did not not presented oral arguments, I request to turn it over to the Secretary of State.
All right, I'm satisfied. This has just been gnawing at me through the proceedings.
I apologize, Your Honor, and we had notified the clerk of the court yesterday of our intention not to argue oral arguments.
Thank you, Mr. Cannon. Any other observations? That concludes the oral argument in this call. The court will now be in recess, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
All right. Oye, oye.